You're listening to another inspiring teaching from Devonport Church of Christ, Tasmania, Australia. For more information about our church, please log on to www.devonportcoc.com.au.
Good morning, church. This is a finger blaster. It's a foam rocket. It's got a rubber band in the end that you can fill with potential energy. And they're great for games at youth where we can fling them at each other. But if you fill that with potential energy, you let go and it flies forward. Now, I want you to imagine for a moment you are a finger blaster. God has picked you up. And as he picks you up and he places you where he wants you, he's starting to pull back on that rubber band. He's starting to fill you with potential. Because everybody in this room has God-given potential. Everybody in this room, God has given the potential to do incredible and amazing things. But sometimes we're not able to fulfill that potential. Sometimes we may not listen to the instructions from God and we let go from the wrong end and it doesn't fly off. Sometimes you may not know where to aim at. And sometimes it takes you so long to obey, you actually lose the potential and nothing happens. See, God has given us all potential, but we have to choose to step into it and to release it. Welcome to our fourth week of How to Squander Your Potential. This January, we're exploring the ways in which we can waste, miss, or ignore our God-given potential. And just like a finger blaster, our potential can be lost unless we choose to step into it. And we've been exploring the life of King Saul, Israel's first king. And this was a life that was full of so much God-given potential. But Saul squandered it in so many ways. Now, just to be clear, we're looking at Saul's life as an example of what not to do. So we want to avoid the mistakes that Saul has made. And if you've missed some of the sermons in this series, then I'd encourage you, go to our website, check out the podcasts. Go to our YouTube channel and watch some of the other messages that have been shared in this series. So far, we've explored 1 Samuel chapters 13, 14, and 15, and today we're going to just skip a couple of chapters and go to chapter 18. So let's just get a little bit of context about where this fits in the story of King Saul. Last week, Saul disobeyed God again by trusting his own judgment and not fulfilling the mission and the command God had given him. God told him once again he was going to take the kingship away from Saul. It was his second warning. God has then called the prophet Samuel to go to a little field outside Bethlehem. And when he is there, he is going to find the youngest son of a man named Jesse. Samuel finds him, and then on God's orders, he anoints this youngest son. This is a man after God's own heart. He is going to be the next king of Israel, and his name is David. Yes, that David. See, sometime after he's anointed, David goes and he fights the Philistine giant Goliath. He's delivering food to his brothers in the war, and he sees that Goliath has been tormenting the Israelites for 40 days. So David marches up there and he does what Saul should have done in the first place. He trusts in God to deliver Israel. Goliath is defeated. The army continues to wage war against the Philistines. And David is actually enlisted into the army. He becomes part of the army, and the Bible says that every mission that Saul sent him on, he achieved success. So much so that Saul made him a commander of the army. Now the army is on its way back home, and as they're coming home, there are women from the towns and villages that are coming out, and they're singing before the army. And this is where we pick up the story today. 1 Samuel 18, verses 7 to 9 says, As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. See, up to this point, Saul has been incredibly impressed and amazed with David. David has shown himself to be brave, to be trustworthy, to have courage, to want to serve Israel. He's demonstrated his ability time and time again. And as the king, Saul would have been loving the experience, because as the king, Saul gets the credit for what the army does. It would have been good for Saul's reputation. But then, as they're coming home, the women have come out and they've sang this song, and it's almost like there is this flash of realization in Saul's mind. All of a sudden, Saul starts to see things in a slightly different way. Suddenly, he sees the popularity that David is gathering amongst the people, and Saul is jealous. And I don't mean just a little bit jealous. I mean really jealous. Saul allows jealousy to rule him. Now, this isn't just a case of you see something and you feel a little bit jealous and then you kind of stop and think about it and go, why am I jealous about this? And so you just get rid of it. No, Saul falls into the same mistake that he has made in the past. Saul allows his jealousy to control him. He allows his emotions to control him. He's done it with pride. He's done it with fear. And now he's allowing his jealousy to control him. Saul allows himself to feed the jealousy. He nurtures it. He grows it. And verse 9 of our text points out, from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. Just letting you know, this isn't a friendly eye. This isn't an encouraging or a mentoring eye. This is a jealous eye. This is the eye that is looking for weaknesses to exploit. And in fact, for the rest of his life, this jealousy would cause Saul to look for ways to kill David. In the next two verses, we actually see the very next day after this song, Saul tries to use his spears to kill David twice. And this jealousy, this desire to kill David would become a defining feature of the rest of Saul's life and reign. But in order to understand why jealousy is so bad for us, because I don't think that we're going to try and take it to murder, we have to actually understand what jealousy is. And even though jealousy and envy can often be confused for each other and people will often use them interchangeably, there's a difference. Envy is when we look at what someone else has and we want it for ourselves. So for example, if I go out for a meal with my wife, Emma, and her meal comes out first, I'm envious. I'm hungry, I want my meal. Makes sense. Now, jealousy is when we feel that something of ours has been taken by someone else. It's this protective feeling for our stuff. So again, if Emma and I are out for a meal and Emma steals one of my chips, why are you laughing? It's a serious thing. If Emma steals one of my chips, I'm going to get jealous because she's taken one of mine. And besides, if she wanted chips, she should have just ordered chips. Anyway, the problem, other than the fact that I really like my chips, with jealousy is in many circumstances, what we think is ours is not actually ours. That's what we see in verse 8 of the text today. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? What more can he get but the kingdom? Saul is jealous that David is going to take the kingdom away from him. And Saul has forgotten, even though he is king, he doesn't actually own the kingdom. And that's because jealousy is born when I mistake yours for mine. Saul's jealousy has led him to believe that as the king, Israel belongs to him. In actual fact, he is merely a steward of something that God has blessed him with. God has allowed him to lead the nation here on earth. He's given him the potential to be able to lead Israel well, but at the end of the day, God is King of Kings. God is the one who still has authority. God is the one who still owns Israel. Saul was merely his steward. Saul was allowed to lead by the grace of God. And I think at this point, Saul is probably wondering, maybe David is the one that God said he'd be giving the kingdom to. God was going to take the kingdom away from me. He was going to give it to someone else. God was going to anoint another as king, but Saul didn't know who or when. He must wonder, is this young shepherd, this guy who slew Goliath, would he possibly be the one? Now, it is important for us to understand, and this is demonstrated by the many, many failures of Saul that are recorded before David even arrives on the scene. David didn't cause Saul's failure. David did not steal the kingdom from Saul. He didn't take it from Saul. He wasn't the cause of Saul losing the kingship. Saul squandered his own potential. He lost sight of who owned the kingdom and who called the shots, and therefore he lost the kingdom long before David ever arrived on the scene. See, when we talk about jealousy, we're talking about when you mistakenly believe that you own something that you really don't. And now somebody else is trying to take it away from you. When you feel jealous over the amount of time that someone is spending with a friend of yours, you do that because you feel that you have a right to that time with your friend. When you feel jealous in a relationship, it is because you feel you own time with that person. When you are jealous over what someone else at work or school has been able to achieve, that they've taken a position, they've received accolades or a reward that you feel belongs to you, that's jealousy. In reality, we don't own any of these things. We don't own anyone else's time. We don't have a right to certain accolades or rewards. And when we lose sight of that, we provide a place for jealousy to grow in our hearts. James 1:17 reminds us, every good and perfect gift comes from above. It comes from God himself who has chosen to bless us. They come from him. We are just stewards of these gifts. Take a moment. Think about some of the good things in your life, some of the blessings that you have been given by God, the gifts that you've been blessed with, the talents and abilities that you have, your finances, your reputation, your family, your job. These blessings come from God, but they are gifts that he has given us to steward. God gives these things to us so that we can do something with them. These blessings are so that we can achieve our God-given potential. Your gifts, your talents are for the purposes of God's kingdom. Your finances are there to demonstrate the love of Christ in this world, not so that you can have the fanciest house and point it out to everybody around you and say, look at me, look how good I am. Jesus shares the story in Matthew 25 of the parable of the talents. A rich man was going on a long trip, so he gave his servants different amounts of money. And when he returned, he asked, what had they done with it? What have they achieved with the potential that he had given them? Now, to those who had used their talent to increase the gift that they had, the man gave them a greater responsibility. He gave them a greater reward. They were invited to have more. In fact, they were invited to have more potential. But to the one who merely buried their gift, the rich man was angry. He had squandered it. He hadn't stewarded his gift properly. He hadn't used it the way it was meant to. He hadn't stepped into his potential. These gifts, talents, and blessings that God pours out upon us, they're not just to make our life comfortable. It's not to make our life easy for us, but God has blessed us so that we can bless others. God has blessed us so that we can expand his kingdom, so that we can step into the potential and the good works that he has prepared in advance for us to do. Now, jealousy is born when we mistake God's blessings for our own possessions. We're stewards. We're called to use them. But verse 7 and the beginning of verse 8 reveal another issue with jealousy. Let's read those verses again. As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. "They have credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" Well, here we see that jealousy forces competition. In the Message paraphrase, it actually says that Saul took this song as a personal insult. Saul took this song that they were singing as a personal insult, but the thing is, it wasn't meant that way. Those women singing weren't insulting Saul. They weren't even putting David above Saul. And I know that there is a big difference between 1,000 and tens of thousands. But in Hebrew poetry, 1,000 and 10,000, they're used as a word pair. It's a fancy way of saying lots. They were celebrating the incredible deeds of both their king, Saul, and the war hero, David. They were saying, "We consider you both to be heroes. You have both saved Israel." But when Saul heard the song, with jealousy brewing in his heart, he immediately saw competition. In Saul's eyes, this became Saul versus David, and Saul was losing. He only had thousands, whereas David had tens of thousands. Now, if only Saul had stopped and taken a breath, he might have realized what was going on. But Saul's jealousy forced him to think in competitive terms. It forced Saul to stop looking at the big picture. He missed the fact that David is successful on every mission he goes on. David is defeating Israel's enemies. The Philistines were becoming scared of Israel. Israel is becoming stronger. See, Saul was so blinded by seeing David as his rival that when Saul finally died, the Philistines controlled as much of Israel's land as when Saul became king. He squandered his potential. And allowing jealousy to control us is like a soccer team going out of the field, and instead of working together as a team, it's each individual for themselves. You've got every team member running after the ball in a huddle wherever it goes. There's no passing, there's no giving to another teammate. And instead, you've got teammates tackling each other. You've got teammates pushing each other out of the way because they want to control the ball. The goalie who's meant to be defending the goals is up in the opponent's half because in their eyes, it is only a goal. It only matters. It's only an achievement if I'm the one who gets to do it. That is chaos. That is the competitive and destructive nature of jealousy. Everyone is doing their own thing. Everyone is trying to win their own individual game. There's no sense of a team that is working together to win. So let me ask you a question. How do you respond when somebody compares you? Maybe they don't even mean to. Maybe it's a comment about how efficient a person is at doing your old job. Or maybe a comment about how close someone is to the person that you consider your best friend. Or maybe it's a comment about how clean somebody else's house is, and it was meant completely innocently, but you know your house isn't really that clean. How do you respond? Is your first reaction to celebrate with them? Or is it to cut them down? Do you support or compete? See, as Christians, we're told by Paul that we are all members of one body. One body, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one Spirit. We belong to the same team. We're all members of the one kingdom. We have the same goals, and when jealousy is introduced to that body, it It wants to pull that unity apart. It wants to destroy that unity because jealousy wants to claim glory for itself. And Saul's life warns us that that's the way that leads to squandered potential. But instead, the way of Christ is that we work as a team. We use the gifts that God has given us. Some people are up the front. Some people are behind the scenes. Some people are encouragers. Some are those that prepare the way. And some are those who are blessed enough to be able to harvest what other people have planted. But we use the gifts as a team. Now, I remember being a younger leader at Camp Clayton, and there were campers that you would see camp after camp after camp. You'd be able to build a good relationship with them. And I remember sharing stories with these young people about who God is. I would have conversations with them time after time about who God is. I'd share His love for them. I'd share that He made them, that He created them. I'd share that Christ died for them time after time after time. I'd plant seeds and I would water them. And then I'd see them at another camp later on with another leader. And I'd hear how another leader got to lead them to Christ. And I remember being frustrated. Why did they get to do that? Why were they the ones that got all the hard work I put in? What about me? What about what I did? Didn't it matter? That is jealousy. That is losing sight of the big picture, and that is giving in to competitiveness. And I'll be honest, I'm ashamed of the way that I felt there because I made it all about me. I've since begun to understand I had the honor of preparing the ground. I had the honor of preparing the way for others. I was part of the process. It didn't matter who got to harvest at the end. What matters and what is important is that now there are more young people following Jesus Christ than there were before. Amen? God has given all of us gifts. He has blessed us all with talents and with possessions. And He calls us to steward those gifts. But He doesn't call us to steward them as lone wolves. He hasn't set us up to compete against one another. This is not survival of the fittest. We are all part of one body. And that means that if we want to step into our potential, if we want to step into who God has called us to be, then we need to work together. That means in order to fulfill our potential, we need to learn to be humble. We have to seek not just to fill ourselves, but instead to seek what is best for the kingdom of God. And even if that means we don't get accolades, even if that means we don't get noticed or attention for the work that we put in, even if that means that after time, we're not the ones who get to harvest, that's okay, because we're all going for the same goal and the same purpose. And so what if Saul, suspecting that David was going to replace him, didn't allow jealousy to block David out of his potential? What if instead Saul used his opportunity to grow David? What if he used his position to train David as a leader? What if he used this time as a way of helping David understand the mistakes that he had made and to learn from them? Because what if our potential is not just to achieve great things ourselves? What if our potential is not to push as far forward as we are able to do ourselves and burn ourselves out in the progress, but at least we made a mark on the wall? What if our potential is to run forward, to clear a way for those who come behind us? What if our potential is to provide a solid and a safe foundation for those who come after us, for them to build off so that they can achieve heights we have barely dreamed of? What if our potential is to be an example of people who continue to seek God deeper and deeper throughout their whole lives, who continue to use their gifts and talents, not just in the same ways, but who are looking for new ways to use their gifts to extend the kingdom, to be an example for those who are coming after us. I can remember ever since my first daughter was born, I have prayed for my daughters. I've prayed for them that they would know God deeper than I know him, that they would hear him more clearly. They would rest in his love. They would respond to it so much more than I do. But you know what? I don't use that as an opportunity to just go, I've gotten as far as I need to because God's going to take them further. I want to push deeper into God myself. I want to learn to tune his voice in more and more and more because I know that my God can do amazing things. I want my life and my potential to be an example to my girls, but I know that God can take them even further than I can go. But I want to go as far as I can first so that they have an example to follow and they have a foundation to build off as God takes them further than I go. There are pictures on the screen right now of some of our young people. And these young people are having the opportunity to share with other young people who God is. This isn't all the young people who have had this opportunity. These are just some that I had pictures of. But they're having the opportunity to step into, to test, to try, to seek, and to learn who God has made them and gifted them to be. But they're only able to do that when those of us who are already in the space step aside. But we don't just step aside and do nothing. We're not just stepping them aside and leaving an empty space for them. We need to step aside and we need to look them in the eye and we need to say, do you want to try? Do you want to have a go? We need to step aside and we need to encourage them. We need to speak into their lives and to help them to know who God has called them to be. We need to step alongside them and support them as they learn how to do it. Because what if maximizing your potential is realizing it is not all about you. Instead, it is all about us. It is all about what we can achieve for God's kingdom together. What if?